Radio Prague News.
Czech Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček has welcomed the news that the passage of vessels for Ukrainian ships carrying agricultural products through ports in the Azov Sea has been unlocked. The Speaker of the Czech Lower House of Parliament will represent the Czech Republic at the funeral of former US President George Bush in Washington. And the app-based ride-sharing service Taxify has been banned from operating in Prague. Czech Foreign Minister Tomáš Petříček has welcomed the news that the passage of vessels for Ukrainian ships carrying agricultural products through ports in the Azov Sea has been unlocked. Speaking to journalists at a meeting of NATO foreign ministers in Brussels on Tuesday, the Czech Foreign Minister said NATO supports Ukraine and is taking practical steps to increase its stability, security and resilience. The Czech Foreign Ministry earlier described Russia's blockade of the Kerch Strait and the use of force against Ukraine's naval vessels as a violation of international law and called for a de-escalation of tensions. The Speaker of the Czech Lower House of Parliament, Radek Vondráček, will represent the Czech Republic at the funeral of former US President George Bush in Washington on Wednesday, according to the office of the Czech President. Czech political leaders have paid tribute to Mr. Bush, highlighting his service to his country and the fact that he helped usher in a new post-Cold War era. The app-based ride-sharing service Taxify has been banned from operating in Prague until it meets the conditions required for a regular taxi service. The Prague Municipal Court ruled on Tuesday that, like Uber, the Estonian company must agree to respect conditions which would put it on an equal footing with taxi drivers by operating a licensed service with drivers registering and taxing their earnings in the Czech Republic. Taxify may still appeal the verdict. The company started operating in the Czech Republic in 2015. Opposition parties in the lower house are calling for a parliamentary commission which would evaluate the influence of foreign agents on developments in the Czech Republic. A joint proposal for such a commission has been tabled by the Civic Democrats, the Pirate Party, Topo 9, the Mayors and Independents and the Christian Democrats. The move comes in response to an intelligence service report warning of heightened activity on the part of Russian and Chinese agents in the country. The youngest Czech deputy in the Czech lower house, Dominik Feri, 22, from Topo 9, has appeared on Politico's list of 28 people who are shaping, shaking and stirring Europe. The people listed are divided into three categories, doers, dreamers and disruptors. Dominik Feri appears eighth on the list of dreamers. Feri, who was on the local council of his hometown Teplice at the age of 18, won a seat in the lower house in last year's parliamentary elections. He is the youngest ever MP in the country's history. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Wednesday should be clear to partly cloudy with day temperatures between 1 and 5 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, the Czech Counterintelligence Service brings out an unusually candid report about Russian and Chinese spying. Outcry over the attempted demolition of a valuable Prague Art Deco villa. And later, the Indian director who made a 7-hour documentary about Czech New Wave cinema. All that's coming up in today's program. The latest annual report of the Czech Counterintelligence Service, BIS, has outlined a series of threats to national security in what analysts say is unusually candid language. In particular, BIS points to efforts by Russian and Chinese spies and other actors in terms of spreading disinformation in a bid to sway public opinion and engaging in economic espionage. Brian Kennedy has more.
In past reports, BIS has warned of efforts by foreign actors backed by Russian or Chinese capital to influence politicians and regulatory bodies, for example, to award public contracts to non-transparent entities in the energy and ICT sectors. The service has also in the past noted growing influence and intelligence operations by both Russia and China. But analysts such as Jakub Kolensky, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council who specializes in pro-Kremlin disinformation campaigns, says it's not so much the new information in the report, but the direct way it is being imparted that is noteworthy.
It is not that much about giving more details, but yes, it is about being less diplomatic in the language, more outspoken, more explicit. So it is a difference if you say foreign powers are trying to influence the information space of the Czech Republic, and it is a difference if you say Russia conducts hostile information operations. The perception of the sentence will be really very different.
On the economic front, according to the BIS report, there's an increasing amount of hidden Russian capital and interest in Czech private companies, in which the true owners, often former Russian intelligence officers, are represented by Czech white horses, meaning frontmen, or their participation masked through complex ownership structures and offshore structures. The aim could be to gain control of key assets or access to sensitive or even compromising information. The service also points to growing economic espionage by Chinese actors. Mr. Kolensky says that by naming names, or naming and shaming, as it were, BIS is sending a message to other state actors who perhaps have not heeded warnings made through non-public channels.
I think this is really a good trend, because sometimes you hear the people in the services that their clients, meaning the politicians, are not listening to them enough. Giving more information, being more explicit about the threat, will help to generate a public pressure on the politicians. The journalists will be able to ask them, so what are you doing about it? So I think it is a step in the very right direction.
The BIS report notes that Russian activities, quote, have continuously focused primarily on influence operations and the exploitation of Czech sources in a long-running campaign to influence public opinion and undermine support for the EU and NATO. That said, disinformation sites appearing in the Czech online space are only a tiny part of Russia's hybrid strategy in this regard. Mr. Kolensky, who for several years worked in Brussels for the East Stratcom Task Force, the EU's direct initiative to identify, debunk, and counter Russia's disinformation campaign, says he was surprised that the BIS asserted that Czech students are still being taught a, quote, Soviet interpretation of history, which would signal a truly deep, long-term attempt at influencing opinion.
Here it's really hard to say whether it is Russians actively working with some useful idiots in Czech Republic, or rather, and this would be probably my guess, more a legacy of the communist period. But that's also quite a sad testimony that in 30 years we still teach an interpretation of the history that was written by a dictatorship that was occupying us.
Jakub Kolensky, ending that report there by Brian Kennedy. Locals in a protected villa district in Prague's Vinohrady were shocked as one of the houses, an Art Deco building from 1921, started being torn down on Friday. The local mayor has halted the demolition and is pursuing legal measures to protect the villa, as Tom McEncrow reports.
It is not the first case of an historic building being torn down in the Czech capital. While the Art Deco villa itself is not a listed building, it lies within a protected zone of villas in the south of Vinohrady, known as Své Pomoc. Architecture historian Zdeněk Lukeš explains what makes it unique.
It is a shame because it is a house that was designed by one of the most important Czech architects of the interwar era, František Libra, and it is part of the colony of buildings that he designed in the Art Deco style.
The owner of the property is AWM Bohemia CZ. Since February 2017, the company has had permission to implement gradual adjustments to the building, but not its destruction. According to Mayor of Prague 10 Renata Chmelová, the company said it had discovered cracks as well as critical damage to the building's roof. However, when she spoke to the building manager, he failed to come up with any evidence.
Personally, I did not see any rotten roof. The cut-up pieces of wood were completely healthy. When I asked him to prove it to me through some sort of documentation, he showed me some photograph of a rotten piece of wood, completely out of the building's context, a completely irrelevant piece of evidence.
Mrs. Khmelova and her team are now pursuing legal action against the owner. This could force it to restore the building to its original state and pay a fine. However, some have highlighted the current fines, which can go up to 2 million crowns, are not high enough to stop owners demolishing rundown houses in lucrative areas. Mrs. Khmelova, who is also a senator, says she will be pursuing a change to legislation which will crack down harder on rogue owners.
There are a lot of cases like this. For example, I remember when Blanka Matragi's villa was demolished and, if I recall correctly, the owner ended up just getting a 200,000 crown fine. I want to make this case into a precedent that forces owners to realise they can't use such methods if they own a building in a protected zone.
Architect Zdeněk Lukáš says that above all, the destruction of unique historic properties is not in the long-term interest of the owners themselves.
I think it is especially important to appeal to the owners that these are buildings of good quality whose worth will grow with time, and it is therefore in their own interest to repair these buildings and not destroy them.
Architecture expert Zdeněk Lukáš, ending that report by Tom McEncrow. Now, Ruth Frankova speaks to an Indian filmmaker who put together a documentary about Czech New Wave cinema that is 7 hours long.
Since his studies, Indian filmmaker Shivendra Dungarpur has been fascinated by the work of Czech director Jiří Menzel. 8 years ago, he started making a documentary dedicated to the Oscar-winning director, as well as other Czech New Wave filmmakers. The 7-hour-long documentary is called Checkmate, In Search of Jiří Menzel, and features 85 interviews with close to 20 Czech movie makers, including Miloš Forman and the now deceased Jiří Němec and Věra Chytilová. I spoke to Mr. Dungarpur over the phone to India, and I first asked him how he became acquainted with the Czech New Wave.
I still remember the very first time I saw Closely Watched Trains when I was studying at the film school in Pune in Western India, very close to Bombay, where I live now. And I still remember watching Closely Watched Train, and I couldn't believe how can a film have such light humor while talking about such a serious subject. I was fascinated. I was fascinated because the story was about small people. It was about ordinary people. It was about an ordinary station. And I'd never seen a film like that, being a film student. And, you know, Jiří Menzel is a very popular, not only in the film school, but in the film society movement. His films were constantly shown. And I had the privilege of watching, I think, 3 filmmakers at that point. It was Miloš Forman, his early films, and then Věra Chytilová. Her Daisies was something which, even now, I continue to watch it. So that was my first initiation, I would call, of the Czech New Wave. You get so much about the French New Wave, you get so much about the other New Waves, but there was very little about the Czech New Wave.
Was this the reason why you decided to make your documentary?
I mean, there were 2 reasons for it. One was, of course, that I wanted to, at one point of my career, I was doing extremely well as an advertising filmmaker. I was making commercials. And I was wanting to get back into films. And I wanted to remember the masters of cinema whom I learned filmmaking from. And I wanted to travel and meet them. And Jiří Menzel was at that point in 2010 when I first came to meet him. He was off the press. I think the only reason he met me that there was somebody from India coming all the way to meet him in Prague. But what I discovered in that conversation was the extraordinary range of filmmakers which we had not heard of in India. Filmmakers who were senior to him, who were the precursors of the new wave, like Vlachil or Jasny, and the filmmakers to follow with him in the new wave. And also the Slovakian filmmakers, whether it's Jakubisko or Hanák or Grechner. So I wanted to find out this extraordinary talent which the Czech New Wave had and the oppression they were fighting. And I think the research which went on was an organic process of research, which meant that I was meeting the filmmakers and discovering as I went along. And not only the filmmakers, but the actors of that time, the writers of the time, which included Ivan Passer, who also wrote for the New Wave director, but also directed one of the most beautiful films, Intimate Lighting, whom I met in Los Angeles.
How difficult was it to actually get in touch with all of these filmmakers and convince them to speak with you?
Well, it was difficult. I mean, it was difficult. We had several people in Prague who could help us with that. And several times we had to make the calls. And I remember the wonderful struggle we had. I call it wonderful because now when I look back, it's wonderful. With Jan Nemec, how many times he called us, he cancelled us, he refused to give interviews. I lied to him one day that I wanted an autograph of his photograph so that I could get an interview. And I waited outside his house, and when he came out to do some shopping, I reached out with my cameraman and said, I need your interview. He said, you're impossible. You're following me. You're chasing me. I think I had that passion, you know. The 8 years went by just trying to convince people that what I'm doing is something which would be an important piece of history for the future generations to see. This great band of filmmakers who made films in this most extraordinary time. And the films which are not only we all have loved, but I've been deeply inspired. I think the only reason I can keep going on making films is when I think of those wonderful filmmakers I spend time with.
And which of these meetings has made a particular impression on you?
Well, each of them. If you're sitting with Dušan Hanák in Bratislava at his house, the conversations we've had, it's been so extraordinary because about his work in fiction and in non-fiction and how he used to work together on them. Or if I'm sitting with Jakubisko in his office in Prague, or the wonderful time I spent with Mr. Ishi Menzel at his house, with his family, or the little time I spent with Vera Shikilova at her house, interviewing her, shooting with her, talking to her about her life, about her films, Jaromíra Vinová, traveling all the way to her village, finding her there in the village in this beautiful house of hers. I think each one of the New Wave directors or each one of the actors whom I interviewed, there cannot be a time where I can say that either this was more wonderful than the other.
And would you say Czech New Wave films still have any relevance to Indian viewers today?
See, art is such a strong part. I mean, Czech New Wave is such a strong sense of an artistic expression which has meaning in any time, in any place, in any part of the world. And I think India was no stranger to that. We love the Czech New Wave filmmakers. I mean, the filmmakers of that generation. But what is more important is, through my film, I think India will be able to discover a whole range of other filmmakers which they had never heard of. For instance, I think they never knew the mastery of Francis Chek Vlachil. I think he's the most extraordinary filmmaker I've discovered. Extraordinary. If the world would have seen Vlachil's work, I think he would have been called the greatest filmmaker. So have been so many of the other New Wave directors. I talk about Vihonova. You know, I've spoken about Hanák. I've spoken about the others, Pavel Juracek, for instance, Ivar Shom. I mean, these are names which were not popular in India. These are filmmakers whom I've dealt with in this film. Some who were alive when I was lucky to interview them, some who were not alive, and I got the response from other people. But you won't believe it. Rabal is a very popular figure in India. People really revere him. There are many clubs which talk about Rabal's writing. But I think contextually, to get a link between his involvement with the New Wave and his writings is something which the film has done, which will give a different perspective to people in India.
As you said, your documentary is 7 hours long. Who is it actually intended for?
For me. You know, I never make films keeping that in mind. I hope, if I've enjoyed making it, and I've learned a lot from it, I hope that the others would enjoy the same way. I think it's a research piece. If people who are passionate about films, people who love films, people who want to discover the Czech New Wave, they want to discover that cinema, they want to discover that period. For me, the most interesting filmmaker in terms of documentary was Vajek, you know. I mean, he made wonderful documentaries at that time. And for anyone who wants to understand that period of time, right from 1948 when the Czech cinema was nationalized right till 1989 when the revolution took place and when they got their independence, this would be the film to see. Because through this film, you'll be able to see the entire history of not only the New Wave, but also of what was happening in the country at that time.
Your knowledge of Czech cinema is quite incredible. Do you have any other plans into the future concerning Czech films and Czech cinematography?
I wish I had other plans. You know, for me, I'm a man of that moment, spontaneous, and I like to keep it myself. For me, it was important to understand Czech cinema at that point of time. And I wanted to learn from it. And I just went by that instinct. And what I've tried to do through the film is that also take interviews of the younger generation, whether it's Rebček or it's Ondřej Čech or it's Radim Špešek, all the younger generation directors, and how they view the older generation and how they look at the future of cinema, and connected it with what's happening politically in the Czech Republic at this point in time. And I think people will be able to get that perspective. And I call it my journey, because it was a journey for me, and it remains a journey. It remains a beautiful journey. I've spent 8 years of my life making this film.
Shivendra Dungarpur, his interview with Ruth Frankova, was first broadcast in March of this year. That's all we have time for in today's program. Please send any comments you have to english@radio.cz. And you'll also find us, of course, on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening, folks. And do join us again soon. Thank you.